The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We are joined this morning by Tim Robinson. Tim Robinson is an active real estate investor. He's been investing for about 5 years, mostly buy and hold, single family and small multifamily properties. He owns 6 units in 3 states. And he is looking to do a 1031 exchange, but is having some interesting adventures in the DC market right now, which he may talk about. And essentially, we are excited to talk to Tim because he is one of 2 people that make up the REI Concierge. And he can tell us a little bit about that in terms of starting a business while being overseas and working with a partner, all those fun things. And so, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tanya. So excited to be here.
So, Tim, tell us about how your investment story started.
Sure. I always go different directions with the story, so you guys are going to have to cut me off if I start rambling. But it basically started, let's say it started, but didn't actually start in my early 20s when I read the classic, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like everyone on earth has. And I said, wow, this is a great idea. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And this is what I would like to do. But I'm going to put this on the shelf for a little bit and come back in my mid-30s. So that's what I decided to do. So 10 years there of just kind of working after grad school in a variety of sales and marketing roles and just honestly just confirming what I had always thought about business in general, just that I'm pretty good at selling things. You know, I'm a hard worker. I'm a diligent worker. I'm reliable, trustworthy, all the things you're supposed to be. But I just wasn't, I had no autonomy. So I think I made a lot of people a lot of money in certain companies that I worked for, and I enjoyed some of it. But you know, I'm very much an entrepreneur at heart, and wanted to kind of do my own thing. And as I built a family, so I got married to my wife Adrienne in 2016, and as we were dating and starting about, you know, having a family and, you know, all these grown up things, I was like, you know, I'm kind of out. So I was at a tech company doing tech sales where I've been for about 6 years, and it was fine. You know, I liked the people I worked with. It was going well. I was making good money, and I think I started making a little more money than they wanted to pay me at one point. And they basically restructured my entire commission structure to the point where if I didn't hit their, let's just say, audacious numbers, I was essentially going to take a 50% pay cut, which is, that's just too much. Right. So that moment when we had that meeting with the 3 partners, I was just like, oh, this is exactly what I knew was going to happen. You know, like all of these things, all of these jobs, all of this W-2 work that I've done for the past 15 years, this is exactly what I knew was wrong, but couldn't put my finger on it. And that's kind of when everything changed. And I was just like, you know, I'm done. I'm not going to do this. You know, I've given them 6 good years, done everything they asked of me, and it doesn't matter. So I just kind of shifted my mindset to what can I do now that is going to, I'm going to work for my family and I. Like that was my whole mission, is anything I sell from now on, I'm a good salesman. I am only going to sell for the benefit of my family. And that really just led to a lot of soul searching, a lot of conversations with folks that actually enjoy what they do. A lot of conversations with my wife, you know, who's also State Department. And you guys get really good benefits in terms of like just the training. And I know, Tanya, you're not in there anymore, but just the training and just kind of the respect you get and the travel and the advancement and the, you know, non-commission-based structure and stuff like that. Just things that where you're a valued employee. And that's something I've never felt like I've been. I also, and I'm gonna start rambling, guys, but I was thinking about this kind of in preparation for this morning. I was thinking about my dad. So my dad is, he's just the best guy I know. And he's actually my property manager for our properties back in Maryland and DC. But he's retired now. He's just turned 70. He is, Navy Reserve retired after 30 years. He worked at the NSA for decades upon decades. and just, you know, just a patriot and just a hard worker and a good guy and a good team player. And for the last like 5 or 6 years at the NSA, and this is not to disparage the NSA, this is merely to disparage his boss, his direct supervisor was just, can I say jerk? I'm gonna say jerk, if you guys want to edit that. And I just saw my dad, who's like the nicest, gentlest person, just come home every day and just be miserable. And this is after 30 plus years of service. And I'm like, I never want to be in that position. And I like, I wanted to go talk to his boss, you know, like my 65-year-old father's boss. Like, I wanted to go have it out with her, because I'm just like, listen, this guy has done everything for this country, everything for this organization, and he has to limp to the finish line with you belittling him for 5 or 6 years so he can get his full pension. And I was like, everything about this is wrong. And this honestly all happened at the same time. And it was just like light bulbs going off left and right. And I was like, this is wrong. So I got in the whole mindset of starting my own business. And then I just dove headfirst back into real estate. I picked up Rich Dad, Poor Dad again, kind of flipped the light switch from the employee to the investor mentality, and just started thinking of ways I could build around real estate, not necessarily jumping right into investing, but I got my real estate license. You know, I started networking with other realtors and investors and commercial brokers and flippers and anyone I could talk to that had their own businesses and multiple streams of income through real estate, which I think is one of the beauties of real estate is, you know, I have the consulting business with Lisa, the REI concierge. I'm a realtor. I'm also an investor. I provide private equity for flippers. Like, there's all kinds of different income streams that if one goes dry, there's still so many more that are there. And that's all based upon the fundamental principles of real estate. So I kind of just started building these different branches of business and thought processes to kind of like, I don't know, cement my family's future in my head. Like, Adrienne really likes the work she does, but if one day she decides she doesn't, I want to be in the point where I can say, okay, you know, go do what you really want to do. Like, she's, you know, very much into conservation and environmental protection. Like, if you want to go work for the EPA or if you want to go work for a nonprofit and, you know, go work with the rainforest or, you know, get plastics out of the oceans, like, I want her to be able to do that. And I think that real estate investing and just real estate in general will hopefully allow us to get there. So that was long story, short story, long, they say. But I think it was just very much a series of dominoes that fell in very rapid succession that kind of led me to totally shift my mindset and really pour, I guess, all of my efforts into real estate, starting with investment and then building multiple branches of service and business from there.
So you're investing really heavily in a business that was going to be located outside of the country with a partner who is also in another country focused on investments in a third country with clients from all around the world. How do you wrap your mind around all, or how did you wrap your mind around all of this at that time?
Yeah, so good questions. When Adrienne and I first met, we hadn't taken this assignment yet. So we weren't necessarily about to head abroad like imminently. We had a house in Shaw in DC, and we knew it was definitely a possibility. Like, we ended up doing a TDY to Paris for a few months to cover for one of her friends that was out on maternity leave for, I don't know, 3 months, about 2 years after we were together. But we were very much in DC for a couple years when I started this. And then once we started, you know, talking about moving to the Netherlands, or, you know, we were thinking about London at the time, then things changed, and I kind of escalated quickly and let me take a step back and just realize that another domino that fell is this happened while Adrienne and I were together, prior to us being married. But like, this whole job switch and mindset switch happened, and I was just, you know, one bit of advice I can throw out there to new investors whose significant others are not on board yet is don't just start throwing books at them from across the room, because I definitely did that. Where I was just like reading books. I'm like, this makes all the sense in the world. Read this and read this. And here's this article. She's like, I don't care. I'm excited. You're excited. And I got frustrated by that, you know, just to be honest, for a little bit. Then I realized, of course she doesn't care. This is brand new and completely out of left field, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's you got to take a step back and just be like, listen, this is why, you know, I see this future for our family. And I really believe in these founding principles and just building passive income that's going to allow us freedom in the future. And once I started, you know, doing that rather than just throwing spreadsheets at her, she was like, oh, totally, let's do this. And then that was kind of it. So we started moving from there. And it was just, you know, this was, again, ramping up to, we were about to buy a bigger house up in Petworth, because we were, you know, looking to have a son, our son Adam, that is now 2.5. So I'm going to jump all over the place here, guys, because this all is very muddled in my brain because it happened very rapidly. But we ended up taking out a home equity line of credit on our condo in Shaw, that Adrian bought in 2010. So it had appreciated double. So we were able to get out a large chunk of money there and put it down on the house up in Petworth. And then we still had some money left over. And so we knew we were coming to the Netherlands, and I was like, we need one more property. And so I ended up buying a triplex up in Baltimore because I really wanted to get into the small multifamily space, with the remainder of that HELOC. And then I did a lot of hands-on renovations on that myself, totally gutting one of the units that hadn't been touched in 3 or 4 years. And in the meantime, we also got into private equity lending. I have a good friend that's a flipper in Maryland and Southeast DC. And he would just take, you know, a chunk of money and then redo a house, flip it, and then give it back to me with significant interest. So I started doing that as well. And now I still do that with him through my self-directed IRA. Which is a good source of kind of accelerating funds to put back into investments. So I, you just asked really pointed and good questions, and I don't think I answered any of them, but I hope some of that made sense. So the bottom line is, we were not sure we were imminently going abroad. If I knew that, I would have done the exact same thing, because once we did know that, I did the same thing anyway. And then once I got here, and I'm sure we'll go into this later, but that's when I met my partner, Lisa, and was just stoked because I knew someone else at the embassy in the Netherlands that invested in real estate while living abroad. And I was like, oh, that's something we can do. Let's do that.
Before we get to REI Concierge, if I could ask you really quickly, because I think most people don't know about investing through a self-directed IRA. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Take everything I say with a grain of salt, because I just do what my self-directed IRA custodian says, and I don't want to, like, you know, misspeak, because I just recently learned about this myself.
From your perspective and experience. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I had a SEP IRA, so it's basically a self-employed IRA that I had transferred over from an old 401k through my my financial advisor many years ago. And then once I learned about this whole self-directed IRA thing, the way it works is you need to get a certified self-directed IRA custodian. And there's multiple companies out there that do this. But what you can do is just wherever you have an IRA, I don't know how the fund transfers work. You can transfer some sorts of IRAs and maybe some 401ks to self-directed plans. So talk to your financial advisor. But I basically talked to my financial advisor and said, hey, I don't want this SEP IRA invested in the mutual funds that you choose for me anymore. I want more control over it. And so I just had a series of conversations between him and the new self-directed IRA custodian and had that lump sum of money transferred over. And now you can invest in all kinds of different asset classes. Obviously, I'm going to choose to invest in real estate. So I currently am doing a flip with my friend in DC. He basically, you know, gave me a promissory note, and you can release the funds through your self-directed IRA. He does the flip, and then he sends it directly back to my self-directed IRA account with interest. And obviously it, you know, is tax protected in there. But you can do all kinds of stuff. You can buy like gold and silver. You can buy artwork, crypto. There's all kinds of stuff you can buy. But the benefit of it is obviously you can just control what you invest in rather than just leaving it up to the advisors.
And how did you select the
NFTs? They blow my mind. I don't understand them. I listened to a daily podcast on them the other day, and I was like, oh, these are weird. Like, I thought they were weird, but then when I heard them described, they're even weirder than I thought.
Weirder. Yeah. But how did you select the company for the self-directed IRA? Like, if somebody wanted to go about doing this, and I mean, how did you come across the company that you used?
I heard him on Bigger Pockets. Okay. He was a guest on the old school Bigger Pockets podcast. And I was like, I really like this guy. He has a lot of good ideas. And I straight up called him and said, hey, I heard you on the podcast, and he was great. And walked me through the whole process, and I transferred my money over.
And what kind of fees are involved, just for people? I mean, because I think a lot of people have not heard of this way of investing, and they're kind of like, is that even something I should, you know, investigate? I mean, is it expensive? Is there like a monthly fee? Is it a setup fee? Like, how do they make their money?
Yeah, it's a good question. There is a setup fee. It's pretty minimal. I mean, I transferred over, and I'll get into numbers. I don't care. It was like 45 grand. And I think to set it up was like 30 bucks. And I think every quarter, it's nothing. And then every quarter I see like 25 bucks come out of my account for like a maintenance fee. And then the way it works, you can set it up in a couple different ways where, depending on how often you make, I'll just call them trades, let's call them transactions. How often per year you make transactions. Like if you buy crypto and just let it ride for the year, there's a way to set it up where you just pay for that one transaction, or you can pay like a percentage of transactions. So there's different ways to set up depending on how often you change your investing strategy, I guess. Mm-hmm. So you can find the cheaper way there. But the fees are, they're very minimal. I honestly haven't noticed them.
Cool.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. And honestly, it is. I mean, you said it's new, and my CPA had like heard of them, but knew nothing about it. And I just found that out this year when I was filing taxes. And he was just like, whoa, what are you doing with this? Why would you do? And I'm like, listen, man, like I'm a grown man. I know how to do stuff sometimes.
You know, and they're like, not all I'm that not new. No, but it's just, it's not a vehicle or know. They just don't know about it. Yeah. People don't know about it, especially people who are working, you know, kind of more of a W-2 job, because that kind of stuff is usually set up by their employer. Right.
Exactly.
And this is something that you can set up on your own that you get to manage and you get to direct. And back to your comment about autonomy, right? It's the same. I feel exactly the same way that you do, which is I like to be in control of my own investments. Like I don't want someone investing for me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's what this gives you. I wouldn't say full control over, but I mean, 90%.
You have a lot more options. Exactly. IRA,
for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. It's a great product. I encourage everyone to at least look into it, not necessarily make the move, but see if it's a right option for you.
And it doesn't have to be, you know, a big chunk of your portfolio either. It could be part of it where you're still growing things tax-free and you have the ability to select your investments, whether it's real estate or, you know, NFTs or whatever it is.
NFTs. Yes, exactly right. But some people are into that, you know, and more
they are something for everybody.
And you also have a podcast, which we'll talk about as well a little bit later on, because you are one of our podcast crossover guests. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the progression there, right? So you're in the Netherlands and you've got this idea and you've got all these connections back in DC, which is an ocean away.
Sure. First of all, I just want to thank you for calling us a wildly successful global business?
Global business. I know. I was like, wow.
We do officially have clients on every continent except Antarctica now. I just want to throw that out there. So it's global.
Yes, you are.
My master's in international management is finally making my dad proud, because he's like, oh, you have an international business. You're finally using that degree. I'm like, yes, dad. Thanks. Thanks for continuing to remind me of that degree I got. Anyways, we were talking about meeting Lisa. So it wasn't an embassy cafeteria. It was better than that. It was the Marine Corps Ball in Amsterdam.
Ooh, love it.
So we were at this schmancy hotel up in Amsterdam, and we had only been here. My wife and I had only been here maybe a month, because I think we got here in November of 18. And the Marine Corps Ball is typically in December-ish. So we had just arrived and we were there all, you know, decked out in our black tie regalia. And I met John, Lisa's husband, who's a good friend of mine as well, worked with Adrian at the embassy. And so, I don't know, Lisa's very, for those of you that know her, incredibly gregarious and just the connector of all connectors and wants to meet everyone. So I don't even remember how it happened, but I think she just honestly walked up out of the blue and said, you're Adrian and you must be Tim. And I was like, sure. Hi. Lisa. And I met Lisa Tilstra, who is my business partner and dear friend. And then I met John, and we became close family friends. And sure enough, obviously, as real estate investors do, during our first conversation, one of us brought up real estate and it was off to the races from there. I just heard that Lisa's like, yeah, I think she had just bought her fourth house in Kansas City that year from the Netherlands. And, you know, they had bought from the Philippines and from Saudi and all these other stations they'd been in. And I was just like, oh, this is wild. Let's talk immediately. And so we ended up going to get coffee. My son was an infant. He was like 3 months old. And so we went to this coffee shop while he was like dead asleep and just talked real estate for a couple hours and, you know, just talked about different ways that we can get involved while we're still abroad. So we're not sitting on the sidelines the whole time. And then it just kind of grew from there. I mean, I can go into the more of like the story. I'll do a fast forward version. So we were very good friends. With both John and Lisa. John and Lisa ended up, John went to Iraq for a deployment. Lisa got stuck back in the US during COVID. They now live in Sri Lanka. They're working at the embassy in Colombo. And while John was back from Iraq and quarantining, and they were in a hotel in Virginia, John was really the impetus. Like we were having, I don't know, just a Zoom call, just catching up. And John's like, y'all need to do your business now. Like, we had talked about it, I don't know, 4 months before when Lisa was visiting Adrian and I here and picking up some stuff she left in our garage. And we talked about it, and Lisa's like, we should start this business together. Because she was always talking about how she was telling people about how to invest from abroad just conversationally. I'm like, you should start a business. And she's like, no, we should start a business. And I'm like, okay, okay. And so we thought about it for a while and didn't do anything until John kind of kicked us in the pants during quarantine. And we just kind of, we were off to the races, just throwing together plans and reaching back out to my contacts in DC and just calling and introducing ourselves to two partners in 20 plus markets across the nation, trying to see if we can make this thing work. And luckily it has.
You make it sound so easy. I mean, starting a business is not a small thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of paperwork involved. There's a lot of decisions that need to be made about, like, well, who does what? And then how do we handle this thing? And of course, sometimes even with all the planning, there's stuff that comes up that you're like, what do we do with that? So I'm sort of curious, what have been some of the challenges of starting up a business? Is this something that you think is pretty attainable for most people to do while overseas? I mean, granted, it may not be exactly the same type of business, right? But something consulting related, how did that sort of process work for you?
Yeah, let me start with your last question first. I'll preface it by saying none of it was easy. I'm good at making things sound
Amen.
Easy.
Amen. Yeah, it just sounded very easy.
Yeah, no, it was very blasé, but no, it was very hard.
I've been there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To answer your last question, yes, I fully believe anyone that wants to start a business can. I think a good idea is a good foundation, and the mindset that things will absolutely go wrong is essential.
Sure.
It's very much like real estate investing, right?
Yes.
Like, we all know when we buy a property, this water heater will explode at some point. You know, this house, the roof will most likely.
I'm getting visions of it blowing through the roof.
Yeah. Like, something insane is going to happen to this property while I own it. And once you accept that and, like, internalize it and know that's the case, it's not like a maybe, it's just a yes, it will happen. Then you can make moves and move forward. So knowing that everything was going to be difficult and knowing that probably most of the stuff we wanted to do wasn't going to work out right the first try. We just kind of dove in, and the challenges are multiple. I mean, yeah, I am not a detail oriented person. Lisa is not very much either. So, like, you know, registering the LLC was kind of a nightmare, like figuring out how to file taxes, all these little like mundane tasks.
It's very difficult. Yeah. It's not easy.
A lot. It really, and like banking, can I just talk about banking for a minute?
Actually, can I back you up one second?
Please LLC. Do.
Can you talk a little bit about like picking an entity and sort of the state, right? Because this is what business owners have to go through, especially like a lot of EFM businesses. You have to pick a state to be registered in, right? And you have to pick what kind of entity your business is going to be. Is it going to be an LLC? Is it going to be a corporation? Is, you know, all these things. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided on those items for your business?
Sure. We decided on LLC, honestly, because Lisa said that made the most sense. I mean, we did a brief amount of research, and Lisa, I have an LLC that holds some of my properties, and Lisa had an LLC before this as well. So we were somewhat familiar, mm-hmm. and we wanted to keep it as simple as possible. So just for tax purposes and, you know, liability reasons, LLC made the most sense. I mean, there's like an S corp and a C corp and all these things that are just kind of more complicated than we needed. So just honestly, a brief internet research session between both of us, and we were able to come up with an LLC. In terms of where to file it, you need a registered agent for most LLCs, and that just mm-hmm. basically means someone that can get your mail. So good old Dada Robinson came through in the clutch again. Now that he's retired, he can just do all kinds of stuff for me. It's wonderful. But we honestly, like, REI Concierge LLC is registered at my parents' home. Because
so you're in
not?
Maryland then? And you didn't, you didn't think about sort of like, because there's a lot of discussion about, oh, well, you know, this state is better for LLCs and that state. It was just a sheer decision of like, this is where someone can help us with the actual physical mail. And that was kind of how you decided, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Maryland.
Fair enough.
I do have an LLC in Maryland. My other LLC is registered in Maryland. So I'm kind of familiar with the tax filings and the fees that are associated, and they're pretty minimal. And yeah, the fact that in order to do certain things that you would never think necessary, sometimes you need to reach out to your quote unquote registered agent. And knowing that my dad is in Maryland and is more willing to do it than most of my dumb friends, I figured that was probably the best thing to do, was just have it in Maryland.
Cool. And then the actual like setting up of the business, like, so for somebody who's interested, let's say someone's overseas, they're like, hey, I have this really great business idea. I want to set up an LLC. Can that be done just online? Is it, you know, do they have to go in person? I mean, I guess a lot of it's going to be state related, but is it fairly easy to set up a business?
Yes. Easy. Yes. Lots of steps. Yes. So it's easy, but just, it's a little frustrating to be honest. I mean, it's just, again, the details and like the, it's very weird with us to live internationally with, you know, DPOs that we have on our addresses and the
exactly.
international phone
yeah. numbers
where things can't, they can't send us texts because, you know, it has a plus in front of it. Like, it's just nonsense like that that makes it very frustrating. But yes, yeah, so you can form an LLC online pretty easily. There's also a lot of services out there like Rocket Lawyer and LegalZoom and all these kind of like online, I don't know, knowledge-based platforms where you can just go and get legal, like kind of boilerplate legal forms and then custom tailor it to what you're looking to do. So mm-hmm. if you go on like LegalZoom and look at, you know, LLC incorporation papers, like you can download that for like $10, you know, and then you can change up the names and it's like a fillable PDF and you can do it per state. And then you just kind of reach out to whatever entity in your state handles the articles of incorporation and set it up that way. You get an EIN or employee identification number. From what I remember there being some hiccups. I wish I could remember the specific ones. But overall, the whole process took us a couple of weeks, you know, with the mailings and getting everything filed and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you need that employee identification number for IRS purposes, right? And then that, yep. with that number, you can go ahead and form your LLC in the state. And then after you get all those paperwork, then comes the fun part about setting up a banking account, right? No. So you were going that way. So tell us about that.
Tanya, the banking.
I've been there. Oh, especially where I can't even imagine from overseas, like how you even did that because
it's a disaster.
Because you have to be in person for so many U.S. banks, right? To open up a business account. They will not let you do it. Like, even if you're in the States sometimes, like they will not let you do it unless they see your physical face. So
absolutely. Exactly mm-hmm. right. It is wild. Let me tell you this story about our online banking, continuing online banking adventures with the REI Concierge. And then I want to segue and warn international real estate investors about certain things you might want to take care of before you leave the United States of America if you want to use your own money on a down payment. So stay tuned for that.
Woohoo.
But so we ended up choosing, there's a million online banking platforms out there now that are just, they don't have any physical locations because it's 2021 and they're unnecessary. However, in my brief experience, they're all terrible. And that's, you know, not to disparage everyone from doing online banking because you really have to, because like you said, Tanya, like if we do like a PNC or a Wells Fargo or something, they're going to say,
Chase, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, when can you stop by? And the answer is never. So like, what's the other option? So we ended up going with, and I'm just going to say it's Axos Bank, AXOS. And they've been terrible. I mean, I'm just going to be honest for people that are looking at online banking platforms. We get locked out constantly. For some reason, they keep mixing up Lisa and I, and, you know, like her mother's maiden name ends up being mine. And like, her
oh
dog's
name.
Seriously, this happens every week. Lisa's currently locked out.
Wow.
And it's honestly terrible. This is the most frustrating thing about all business that you do, in my opinion, outside of the US, is the banking infrastructure. And this is not just us. Our VA, who does like our Facebook and some of our administrative stuff, she's also an EFM. She lives in Slovenia, and she's had the same thing. She's on her third bank now because the first two were just a nightmare. So that's honestly way harder than setting up an LLC or filing your taxes or getting an EIN, in my opinion. It's just the banking is so hard because they ask just questions that don't apply to us. You know, like, well, you know, you talk to Wells Fargo and they're like, can I send you a confirmations code to your cell phone? And I'm like, you could
no.
if you knew how to text international numbers, but you don't. So you
yeah,
can't.
It's not designed to do it that way.
It's like Lisa, actually, my partner, keeps a US SIM card, like just handy. She has it by her phone. And when a banking institution in the US needs to text the code, she swaps out her SIM card so she can receive it.
Wow.
Like, yeah, there's little stuff like this that just you would never think about because it's so silly. But like...
Well, there's no reason, yeah, to think about it when you're in the States because, you know, I mean, that's what the system is designed for. It's designed for people who live here, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So Yeah, the banking is horrible. And then, so I'll tell this story quickly. When I went to purchase a property in Alabama late last year, I have my I call it my real estate account and my Wells Fargo account back in the States. So, you know, to reserve a property in this hot market, I had to put down like $2,500 earnest money deposit. And despite 3 hours on the telephone with everyone at Wells Fargo, they would not let me spend my own money because I had not filled out a form prior to leaving the States that I had no idea you had to fill out in order to be able to wire internationally. So despite my best efforts to explain to them that I'm not wiring internationally, I just happen to live in the Netherlands. My money's in the States and has to go to Alabama. But in their minds, that's an international wire transfer. And I couldn't do it because I hadn't filled out a paper that I didn't know existed before I left the States. So that ended up being a disaster. And then the same exact thing happened for my down payment. So, you know, we're talking 30 grand now and I couldn't use my own money. And so we had to come up with crazy workarounds through my lender, and like my parents got involved and like pulled some savings out and like had to send it down there at like the 11th hour. And so I'm not bitter. I'm just, you know, I just sometimes need to vent on podcasts. So I just wanted to tell you guys that story. When you're leaving the States, talk to all of your banks and say, listen, guy, I am headed overseas for several years and I would like to be able to use my own money. What kind of forms do I need to fill out? It sounds like a stupid thing to ask, but it would have saved me a lot of heartache. Yeah. So the banking's a big one. Honestly, the cell phone is the bane of my existence. The fact that every online banking portal, whether it be your brokerage account to Mint to your, you know, your TSP account, every time you sign on anything, they want to text you a code and you just can't get it if you're international. That's a nightmare. But I don't know what to do about that except to have a US SIM card handy. The banking thing is a very serious concern. And now I know that, but like you said, I wouldn't have known that prior to leaving, or I would have done that. So I would recommend anyone that's about to deploy or, you know, is back home for any extended period of time, just go to like any banking institution you have accounts with and say, listen, maybe I didn't make it clear that I'm living internationally, but I might want to spend a big chunk of this money while I'm there for a property or something else. Is there anything I need to fill out while I'm here in person in this branch? Because that's something you simply can't do when you live overseas, obviously. Another thing that sometimes poses a problem is using your DPO. So I'm trying to think of specific examples. I know like I'm applying for a mortgage now, right? Because we're thinking about potentially moving when we go back to the States, moving from DC to Maryland. Even though we're probably not going to do that, as I'm getting pre-approved for mortgages, like all these mortgage companies typically use the same software or the same online platform to gather your information on the application. And like the DPO just doesn't fit in there. Like it physically, they cannot type in, you know, DPO. So they have to type in a lot of cases, my previous address back in DC. And these are things that are weird, you know, like when you go to get notarized at the embassy for closing on a property and they see your address as, you know, New Hampshire Avenue in DC. And they're like, you obviously live here. That's not right. And you're like, well, their system's from 1978. That's all they can plug in. You know, like weird little things like this that just take, they just take patience and explanation. Like I wish I had a solution to them, but I don't know what it is. It's just like, these things are going to come up and you just, I think communication is key, you know, especially when you're talking with financial institutions that don't understand what it is to live overseas. Just say, listen, this is how it is. I don't have a physical address I'm going to give you. It's a DPO and we just have to find a workaround. And they always can. It's just a little uncomfortable for them. So I think just being open and communicative helps with that process somewhat. Yeah, we were lucky enough to have Tanya back there on an episode and she was a big hit. So thanks, Tanya, for coming on. We had a lot of fun.
I think I had too much coffee when I talked to you. I was like super
you
hyper.
Everyone loved it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, we honestly, it's just something we started it because we wanted to have fun. Lisa and I thought it would be interesting. We consume, I mean, being a full-time father to a 2.5-year-old, I listen to podcasts constantly while I'm playing Play-Doh and, you know, sparkling glitter. I'm just trying to think of the things we did this morning. We poured glitter in a coloring book and we went for a little bike ride. We rode his little bike. But yeah, I constantly have like, you know, an AirPod in listening to podcasts. So it's just something I like. And I think real estate is more conversational. To a lot of people, real estate is more conversational than it is, I don't know, what what's the converse of conversational when you're talking about reading? It's more conversational than it is like educational. You know what I mean? And I think that what we wanted to accomplish was, because we publish a lot too, you know, like I write a blog every week and Lisa sends out an email newsletter to our subscribers every week. And, you know, we're putting out an ebook soon. And so we do a lot of content and we hope that people are reading it. But at the same time, sometimes we just want to talk about stuff. And sometimes we want to be a little bit more timely. So like we had, you know, Fannie and Freddie came up with that wild thing about, you know, the 7% rule. And I won't go down that rabbit hole, but essentially they want to ensure that banks aren't lending more than 7% or their loans don't total more than 7% of the total for investors. And that kind of threw a wrench in the works of all the lending institutions in America. So we had a lender come on like the day after that happened and walk us through that. Because we wanted to learn too, you know, so it's very much something where we have on guests that we want to learn from, that we want our listeners to learn from. And we just want to talk about real estate. Like as real estate investors, that's how our company started, was Lisa and I having a conversation and other people hearing our conversation and wanting to do the same thing we were doing. And our business was born. So we figure like, if that's how we started, let's keep it going. So we have a lot of fun doing it. And I can't even say what we talk about because we just talk about everything. It is all very real estate centric. We have on property managers and lenders and realtors and just people all over the space to just kind of lend their expertise, especially in the international field. And we have a lot of fun and hope people learn from it.
That's awesome. I love the podcast too, and I think it's a great format, right? Because you're right. It is very timely and you can talk about things as they happen, right? So right. Shifting a little bit, speaking of being very timely, we hear that you were looking for a house in the DC market. How's that going?
Oh, Tanya, I'm so glad you asked because it's wild. It is wild. Yeah. So again, guys, if I just start rambling, cut me off. Because yeah, talk about timely is right. This is something I'm very much smack in the middle of. So current situation, 30,000 foot view. We have a beautiful house that we very much love in Petworth back in DC that is currently an investment property, but obviously will be our primary residence when we move back this summer. What we were thinking prior to everyone on earth wanting to buy a house is that we would like to move closer to my family on the Maryland side of the border when we move back and roll our DC house into a series of properties in the Midwest through a 1031 exchange. That was the dream because it is now an investment property since it's been rented for more than 2 years. But with the way the market is, we are looking. I mean, we are pre-approved for a loan. We have a realtor looking for houses for us that meet our criteria in Maryland. But just recently, I mean, honestly, in the past couple of days, my wife and I have kind of had a heart to heart and just said, listen, this is wild. Like people have lost their minds in the market, you know, in DC in particular. And Tanya, you can speak to this better, but you're going in with no contingencies. You're going in at 100 over asking and you're getting outbid. And in my mind, that's absolutely not worth it, especially when we have a house that we love in a neighborhood that we very much like. So yeah, like while it would be great to be able to 1031 and max out the ridiculous appreciation we've got on this house over the past couple of years, the stress that it's going to put on us to try to make these offers from abroad with no ability to see the neighborhood physically, except videos from our realtor and the whole no contingency thing and paying over asking by, you know, six figures, just, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, we have a friend that's moving back right before us here from the Netherlands and they didn't have a house. So they have to buy a house. And that's very much a different ballgame, you know, so they're luckily under contract in a beautiful house that they love, but, it was a whirlwind to try to get that thing. And they used the same realtor we did. And it's been crazy. So we kind of don't want to do that. And currently plan A is to move back into our house. If like a unicorn pops up and it's the perfect house at the perfect price in the perfect neighborhood, we probably put an offer in. But yeah, we're kind of in limbo in terms of where that is. But I think we'd just like to move back in.
Makes sense. I mean, the market is pretty rough right now for most buyers, right? I mean, and especially for homes close into the DC area. I mean, it's pretty brutal. And I'm still kind of scratching my head about like, who are these people that are offering 100K over list? I'm like, I don't know any of them. And I mean, I work with quite a few clients. So, you know, and I have to say like our colleagues, when they go overseas and come back, I mean, they've got, you know, some money saved up. So it's not like they're doing little teeny down payments and they have ability to compete with, you know, a lot of these people. So I think, you know, sometimes it just takes a while, and a lot of people aren't willing to take anything that's like less than what they really want because it is expensive, right? So there's that too. Mm-hmm. So the good thing is you've got a place to go back to, which is great.
It is great. And that's just the thing, Tanya. Like this is home, you know, this isn't an investment property. And I think there's the whole buying an investment property versus buying home is a very, very different thing. Like if this was an investment property in a crazy market, I wouldn't have nearly the hesitation as I do as moving my wife and small child into it. Home is a little bit of a different purchase. And when you're dealing with buying the stresses of buying a home in general, and then add on all the chaos of the market, like it just, I don't think it makes sense right now, but we'll see. I think mainly it gives you staying power more so than anything else. I think if you do something just because it sounds nice, or, oh, that could probably work out, or, you know, I've seen other people do this. When you have that water heater that explodes, or the tenant that just decides to stop paying rent, or the dog on the property that bites someone and you get sued for all you're worth, these kind of things will happen. They do happen. And if you don't have your why firmly entrenched in your strategy and your mindset and your conversations with your significant other, you're going to bail. I think that why is what kind of sees you through the tougher times, because it is. I was going to say a quote. There's something about like, it's like someone said at some point, things are all usually smooth, highlighted by brief moments of terror. Someone said that in regards to something. And it might have been crab fishing, or it might have been football, or it might have been war. This is getting lost. Anyways, what I'm getting, yeah, options. It's like a choose your own adventure quote. What I'm getting at is real estate, for the most part, is very hands-off. You know, people that say it's completely 100% passive haven't been in real estate long, because that's never the case. But for the most part, it's relatively uneventful. When things happen, they tend to happen big. And in my experience, they tend to happen in threes. You know, like you're going to get a roach infestation, and a sink's going to go, and a toilet's going to explode. And then you're done for 6 months. But if those three things happen in rapid succession, which they have to me multiple times on multiple properties, and you don't have your why firmly entrenched, and you can't go back to it and say, oh yes, that's why I'm doing this, then you're going to be out. You know, you're going to throw up your hands and say, there's, you know, let me buy index funds. And that's fine. But I don't think you're going to be able to get the outsized gains that real estate provide if you don't have your why set up right.
So what is your why?
My why is I would like Adrian and I to be able to do whatever we want, whenever we want, for as long as we want to do it. And that, you know, I don't like it. My why is not to just be able to not work. I think I'm always going to work. I really like the work that I do. I think Adrian's always going to work at what she wants to work at. So I would like to take money out of the picture and be able to do the work that we love for as long as we want to do it, and only when we want to do it. And I think that's really the goal of financial independence. So when our expenses are covered by passive income, and we can say, oh, we don't have to go to work today, let's go ride bikes. That's my why. I want us to be able to do that. I don't want us to become lazy and just, you know, watch trilogies of movies for the rest of our lives, on the couch eating God knows what. I want us to be able to engage fully in the work that we want to do, and not have to work doing things that we don't want to do, because honestly, as cliche as it is, life's too short. So that why keeps me going through all the craziness of being a landlord internationally.
So here's the ridiculous part of the ridiculous hypothetical segment. You wake up tomorrow, right after, well, I guess I don't know what time it is, but where you are, but you wake up tomorrow, whenever that is, and you log onto Zillow or whatever, and you get your Z estimate, and it turns out that your property and pet worth has appreciated to $1 billion. Yes, it is worth $1 billion with a B. What do you do? What do you do next? Let's assume that you can sell it for $1 billion. What do you do now?
Okay, fair for stipulation. My first, so being married, my answer number one is talk with Adrian. My answer number two is in
smart
my
smart man.
Right? Tanya knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Step number two is sell that puppy, get a sweet camper van, and head on down to New Zealand with our bikes. I'm a camper van lifestyle guy. Like, if I could just convince Adrian to just live in a camper van and we just cruise beautiful country with bikes, I'm good to go, you know. And the beauty of like the REI Concierge and real estate investing from abroad is, you know, we're not going to run out of money with a billion for our Petworth house. But if we did, you can keep these things going. And I really enjoy the REI Concierge. I really enjoy investing in real estate. I really enjoy being a realtor. So these are things that even if we are financially independent, I'm going to want to do. But a lot of what I do can be done with an internet connection from my camper van anywhere. So yeah, I would love to ride mountain bikes for as long as I can until I get too old to do it, in beautiful, beautiful different countries around the world.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We had a lot of fun and learned a lot. For those of you who have not checked it out yet, you should definitely check out Tim and Lisa's podcast, The REI Concierge. You can find it on any podcast app, just like you can find ours.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. Congrats on your podcast. Looking forward to checking it out.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.